And we're holding on Nun Vav Amr Aleph by the first Mishnah. Mishnah says, Hanodim in Abayis, if a person makes a neder not to go into a certain house, Mutter Ba'aliyah Divir Rameir. Then Rameir says he is allowed to go into the second floor of that house. Because according to him, in other words, it's not included in the house. Whereas the Chachamim say that the attic, the second floor, is included in the house, and therefore when he makes a neder not to go into the house, then the attic is going to be included as well. But on the other hand, and this everybody will agree to, that if he makes a neder not to go into the aliyah, then he's allowed to go into the house, because then certainly the house is not called after the aliyah. You can say the house is the main thing, the aliyah is the secondary thing, is the auxiliary thing there, but the reverse is not true, so therefore the house can include the aliyah, but the aliyah won't include the house. So the Gemara asks, Man Tana, so which Tana is it? And so now the Gemara is going to bring a related point and relate it to our Mishnah. We know you have the concept of saras of houses. It was just in Rambam Shloshim Prakim a few days ago. So we know that you see spots of certain colors and certain a certain minimum size on the wall. Then the house has saras, and then you have all the dinim that are described in Parshas Metzora in terms of if the saras goes away, if the saras spreads, when you have to just scrape the wall, when you have to and then repaint it, when you have to tear down the house, etc., etc. Anyway. So Mantana, which Tana is it that says in a Braisa that when the Pasuk says Baboyis, the Pasuk says that the person comes to the Kohen and says, a nega, something like a nega was seen by me in the house, that word Baboyis comes to include the Rabbis Etze Yitzia. It comes to include a Yitzia. Now usually a Yitzia means some kind of outbuild, not really outbuilding, but some kind of auxiliary building. For example, in other places in the Gemara, it explains that it means like a little shed or a little lean-to that's built up against the side of the house. Like you have, for example, in the Beis Mikdash, there was the Heichal, and then surrounding it were these little rooms all around it that you see in the diagrams. So each of those, there's a number of names for each one of them, and one of them is a Yitziah, because that's what a Yitziah is, kind of a small building attached to a larger one. Over here, various Mephoshim bring various possibilities of what the Yetziah is in this connection. For example, the Shittim Kubetzis brings that it means, for example, some kind of porch, some kind of porch that you use to go to the second floor. Another one is where you make kind of a makeshift second floor in the house where you use, you put up some kind of horizontal partition a few feet above the floor and a little bit below the ceiling so you have room to store things. So according to that, that would be the Yetziah of our Gemara over here. So the Braisa says, the word Babayis Larabas as a Yitziah, it comes to include such a structure. However, the Ran asks on that the fact is we have a different Braisa that says that if you see Tzaras on the walls of the Yitziah, then the house would not be tummy with Negoyim. You would say at most that you would have to tear down the Yitziah, but not the house as a whole. So the Ran brings and Tosfos bring a different Girsa, that the Girsa is not, also Agaris Hagra brings it, that the word is not supposed to be Hayitziah, which would mean, again, a structure appended to the main house, but rather Hatsavua, which means a house that's painted or a house that's colored. And the chiddush of it would be, we know when it comes to tzaras of clothing, that only white clothing is able to become tamei with tzaras. If you have clothing that's dyed, or even if it's naturally a color other than white, then it's not matama b'negoyim. In fact, you even have dinim about it in Masech b'negoyim and in Hilchos Tumas Tzaras, that if you have, for example, a piece of clothing or a curtain or whatever that has stripes on it, white stripes and stripes of other colors, only the areas with the white stripes or the white checks or whatever are able to have tzaras on them, the rest not. Anyway, so you would think the same thing is true as far as houses, and therefore this babayis barabas as a tzavua, according to that girsa, that it comes to include houses that are a different color, meaning it doesn't matter whether the house is painted a certain color, it doesn't matter whether the stones of the house are naturally a different color, either way, tzaras can happen on it. And so that's one. And the braisa continues, babayis barabas is aliyah. The word babayis also comes to include an aliyah, also a second floor, that again, if tzaras is found on the walls of the aliyah, then the house is going to be tamei. So the question is, which tana in our mishnah would that fit with? Amar Rav Chista, Rav Meir. So Rav Chista says necessarily that braisa about tzaras would have to be like Rav Meir. Because according to the Chachamim of our Mishnah, anyway, the Aliyah, the second floor, is considered part of the house. We should realize, by the way, when you say the second floor over here, the Aliyah, we don't mean, for example, if you have a multi-family house like a lot of the ones we have here in Crown Heights. Then there's no question each one counts on its own. Here we're talking about an aliyah which is used by the members of the household themselves, but it's used as more of a second floor where there are extra rooms over there, there's storage or whatever. So according to the Chachamim, the aliyah is anyway included in the house. So because after all they're saying if you make a neder not to go into the house, then automatically the aliyah is included as well. So according to the Chachamim, you shouldn't need a special drasha to teach you that the aliyah would also be included in the house as far as tzaras. So Hamir Rabban, Aliyah B'chal Abayis, they say the Aliyah is included in the house. Lomali Krav Abayis the Ribuya. So why would we need a Pasuk Babayis to add to us, to tell us that the Aliyah is included in the house as far as Tzaras, if they hold it's included as far as the Dinim of Nedarim anyhow? On the other hand, Abaya Omar, Kula Tamir Rabban, on the other hand, Abaya says no, you could say that Braisa goes according to the Chachamim of our Mishnah as well. Boyakra, you could still say that according to them you need a pasuk to teach us. The Sakatai, the Chamina, otherwise you would have thought. After all, the pasuk says, Uliu in the same pasuk, or the previous pasuk actually, it says, the previous pasuk says, the Vase Eretz Achuzaschem, Ksiv, the pasuk says that you find it in the house of the land of your inheritance. So the machaba ba'ara shmei bayis. So you would say that therefore maybe the word beveis eretz implies that only a house which is directly attached to the ground is called a house for the purposes of tzaras. Aliyah haloi machaba ba'ara. The aliyah is not attached directly to the ground. It's attached to the bottom to the bottom floor, which in turn is attached to the ground. So you might have thought therefore that an aliyah is not included, and therefore you need the pasuk. Therefore, we need the pasuk beveis or nearly baboyis, whatever, to tell us that the aliyah is included as well. So you could still say that braisa does work according to the Chachamim. Okay. Another thing the Gemara says, keman ozla hoda amar of huna bachia mishmei de'ola. What about which one of these two opinions does it fit? This that Rav Huna Bachia says in the name of Ula, bayis beveisai ani moicholoch. Suppose that Reuven says to Shimon, I am going to sell you a house among my houses. So he owns a bunch of different houses, and he's selling him, and he's saying, I'll sell you one of my houses. Mar'ehu aliyah, he is allowed to show him an aliyah. So now maybe we are talking about an aliyah which is actually used as a separate apartment. The truth is, actually, I didn't see anything about it one way or the other in the Mephoshim. It may very well be that the aliyah over here is not, like I said before, and we are, in fact, talking about a separate apartment built on top of the first one. It is true that in many places in Chas, when you talk about habayis for aliyah, for example, in Bava Metzia, it does mean that two apartments, one on top of the other. Anyway, so Reuven is offering to sell Shimon a house, then he can show him, so now, let's say Shimon buys the house sight unseen. So now it's up to, so the din would be, it's now up to Reuven to pick which house he's going to actually transfer title to. So Mar'ehu Aliyah, he is allowed to show him an Aliyah, even though on the face of it, an Aliyah is worse than a house proper, because after all, you have to climb, you have to go upstairs and downstairs to it all the time. It's harder to live in. Because he said bias shabavesai, he said a house among my houses, so therefore that works. But on the other hand, time of the amulet bias shabavesai ani moichaloch. Now, why does that work? Only because he said one of the house among my houses. Avol bias stam, but if you just told him I'm selling you a house. Then he cannot show him afterwards and say that I sold you an Aliyah. Should we have to say that that would be only according to the mayor? Because according to the mayor, it shouldn't matter. Even if he says, bias ani mochalach, according to them, we just said the Aliyah is included in the house. So therefore, just the word bias includes the Aliyah. So therefore, he should be able to tell him, I sold you an Aliyah, even if he only says, bias ani mochalach. So again, that would seem to mean that Rav Huna Bar Chiya's din would go only according to Rav Meir. The problem with that, of course, is that the halacha we would expect is like the Chachamim against Rav Meir, and we don't want. On the other hand, Rav Huna Bar Chiya is already an Amora. In his times, they would have already known the halacha is like the Chachamim. So why is he saying only according to Rav Meir? So the answer is Afilu Tamer Rabbanon. No. Again, you could say that that din of Rav Huna Bar Chiya's works even according to the Chachamim. Because my aliyah, because we can say that what do we mean by the aliyah? What do we mean in the braisa when we say mar'ehu aliyah means actually ma'ula shebabatim? It means the best aliyah maloshin ilui. It means the best of his houses. In other words, on the contrary, when we said that he says bayis shebaveisai ani moichaloch. So we're assuming that it just, we assume to start with that it just means one of the houses among the ones that I own. So I own a bunch of houses, I'm selling you one of them. Now, on the contrary, we're saying that bias shibavesai implies the best of the house, the best among the houses that I have. Therefore, just the opposite. We thought that when he says mar'ehu aliyah means that he can show him, he can say, I sold you an aliyah, and the lekeach and Shimon has no recourse because Reuven can tell him, listen, I told you a house, this counts as a house. And that's why we thought that could be only according to the mayor, who considers the house and the aliyah to be separate things. But now we're saying, on the contrary, what it means is that Reuven has to then show Shimon and actually transfer title to him of the best of the houses that he owns, because that's what Aliyah would mean in that context. Now, if he says bias, then we're saying that he can show him one of the worst ones. Now, all of the Mephoshim over here refer to this statement of Rav Huna Bar Chiya's originally comes from a Gemara in Menachos. You wouldn't expect that things of Dinei Mominus wind up in Menachos, but the case is over there, the Gemara describes the case where a person says, for example, an ox among my oxen is hektish. So the question is, which ox are we talking about? So we say he means the best of his oxen. And then that brings us into this discussion about bias shebaveisai, a house among my houses. Where the Gemara goes through the whole discussion over there, and it actually comes up with the opposite conclusion than it does over here. It ends up saying over there that yes, he could sell him an aliyah, because we would say yad bala shtar ala tachtona, whoever is in possession of the shtar, in this case Shimon, has the lower hand in the sense that it would be a motzi mechaber of araya. If Shimon wants to claim on the basis of his shtar that he's entitled to a better property, then he would have to bring proof to that, and if he can't, then Reuven can give him the worst property. So now, if we follow that conclusion from the Gemara in Menachos, then it would mean that going back to our Mishnah, it would necessarily, so we're not understanding Aliyah as being Ma'ulosh bin Nechassim, we're not understanding as being the best of his Nechassim. On the contrary, we're saying, like we did originally, that Aliyah, that it means that he can sell him the worst of his houses. When he says bias beveisai ani mochaloch, that he's able to sell him the worst of his houses. So that would mean So that would mean, again, we'd have to say that Rav Huna's din would go only according to the mayor, not according to the Chachamim. So would that mean, after all, again, if we have Rav Huna Bar Chiya, who was an Amora, telling us a din, and in his times already they knew of the Machlokas Tanoim, and still he's going like Rav Meir, maybe that would indicate that the Halacha in our Mishnah is like Rav Meir. With that said, though, then he goes on to bring from the Ramban that maybe you can learn the Gemara over there differently. That either way, whether he says that when he says biased, then for sure he can show him an aliyah, even if he says biased the Vesai, whereas we said it implies something better, just like Shur B'Shvorai implies the best of my oxen, the same way biased the Vesai should imply the best of my houses, but still he's allowed to give him only an aliyah. So therefore the result would be that Rav Huna's din would work according to the Chachamim of our Mishnah as well, and in fact that is how it's passed in by the Rambam and Shulchan Aruch, that according to the Chachamim, that Aliyah B'chalal Bayis, the Aliyah is included in the house, like we're saying over here. So that's the Ran's conclusion of the matter, and then Tosfos and the Rosh also discuss it, and discuss how our Gemara fits with the one over there. Basically they come up. So the Tosfos says, listen, you know, here the Gemara is not really dealing with Dine Mominus, and Menachos is not really the place for Dine Mominus either. But over here the Gemara is not necessarily going through all the stages of the argument. We were trying to say whether it's possible in any way to make our Mishnah work like the Chachamim, and therefore the Gemara leaves it at that, without going through any of the other possibilities over there, such as that he's always able to show him one of his worst houses.
Why did you say before them, and with that by Aliyah, he has to show him one of the best houses?
Mm-hmm. So that's the thing. If we say that Aliyah means the best house, then it would mean that there's two different cases. One is where he sells him biased for they say, a house among my houses, and the other one where he just sells him biased stam. So biased stam, there's no question he can show him any kind of house. Because any kind of house included bias. The question would be whether he can show him an aliyah. That, we were saying, might depend on the machlokas, the mayor, and the chachamim. According to the chachamim, the aliyah is included in the house. So first we said that if only because he says bias but they say, then we're saying he can show him aliyah. But then we were saying that maybe aliyah in that context actually means the best of his houses. Maybe it doesn't mean that he can show him the aliyah as in the second floor, but rather that he has to show him the best of his houses. Then we're saying that what about when he sells bias, so he can't show him aliyah? So that would mean that it has to, that would, so that would, that, again, that could mean that he has to sell him a ground floor house, or it could mean that it's not necessary for him to sell him the best.
Why is he using the word aliyah?
Because the word aliyah can mean ma'ula shebabatim, can mean the best of houses. In fact, we find in other Gemaras similar kinds of things like that as well. This idea that aliyah means ma'ula shebabatim, there's Gemara in Brachos that mentions when you have the story of the Isha Shunamis and her husband who made a room for Elisha. So the pasuk says that they figured we'll make an aliyah skirktana, and the Gemara says one possibility is that it's called aliyah, not because it was on the second floor, but because it was ma'ula shebabatim, it was the best part of their house. So we see that sometimes the word aliyah can have that meaning. So again, our Gemara seems to be implying that the word aliyah can mean ma'ula shebabatim. The Gemara in Menachos seems to be implying that no, that it does actually mean the actual aliyah. So again, does that mean that our Gemara and that Gemara are in conflict? And maybe in fact, based on that Gemara, it would mean that we'd have to flip around what we're saying in our Gemara over here, and the result would be the halacha is like the mayor of our Mishnah, that the aliyah is not included in the house, or maybe not, the Ran is saying, and then Tosfos is mentioning, that there are ways to reconcile our Gemara with that Gemara, and the result is the halacha is like the chachamim, that the aliyah is included in the house. And therefore that he might actually be able to show him the aliyah and tell him, listen, I told you I'm selling you a house, and the aliyah is included in the house.
It seems hard to infer that Bayis Beisai means something as specific as the best.
Well, no, there's no, that's the thing. Bayis Beisai, on the face of it, does. The same way as Shor Shvorai means. It means an ox among my oxen. So it doesn't just mean any old ox, otherwise there's no reason for him to say that. He'd just say an ox. So it's hektish.
No, there is a reason. That's exactly the point. No, the reason would be that any ox or any house.
Then he'd just say an ox. If he just meant to say an ox or a house, he would just say that. When he says among my oxen or among my houses, that alone seems to imply that he means something distinguished, something noteworthy among my oxen, something noteworthy among my houses, which is why we...
That's not Lashon Bnei Adam. Lashon Bnei Adam is...
Yeah. Think of it. In English, you have the expression, a man among men. What does that mean? That doesn't mean Sam a man. Otherwise, you would just say that. A man among men means a man who's noteworthy and distinguished among other men. So, yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Mishnah goes on. Hanodim and Amita, a person makes a neder that he's not going to sleep on a bed. Muta v'daugish divid a mayor. The mayor says he'll be allowed to sit on a daugish. And we're going to define in the Gemara, we're going to go through exactly what a daugish is. We had this discussion actually just about a year ago in Moed Cotton, in connection with Dinim of Avelos, because the Gemara is going to bring that in this connection in the course of trying to define what a daugish is.
Turning over the bed.
Yeah, we're going to get to that point, turning over the bed. The Chum say that, no, a daugish is included in the category of bed, and therefore, if he's also to sleep on a bed, then he's also to sleep on the daugish. On the other hand, I'm no doubt a daugish muta b'mita, but if on the other hand, if he makes a neder not to sleep on a daugish, then he's allowed to sleep on a bed, because again, for sure, the category of daugish does not include bed.
One way it doesn't.
Well, think of it like in English, for example. All bread is food, but not all food is bread, right? So a person makes a neder not to eat bread, he's mutter other kinds of food. But if he makes a neder not to eat food, then he's also in bread as well, right? So, yeah. Okay. So the Gemara asks, my daugish. So now, what is a daugish? Oma ola arsa de gaba. So ola says it means a bed of good fortune. People used to set up an extra bed in their house. The Ram says for the mazel of the house. The word gad means good fortune. Like you find when the Shevet God was born, so Leah says, Bo God, good fortune has come.
Why she said dafka by him,
why she said dafka by him that good fortune has come? I mean, for one thing, because like this, she had been the pashtus. I mean, she had been for a while not having children. Now she married off Zilpa to Yaakov, and now it actually worked out. And Zilpa is having children, so she's happy that it actually worked out. So God was the first one born to Zilpah, yeah. But there are other reasons as well. There's a medrash that says that actually an interesting other idea, the Shodesh God also means cut. And God was actually born already gemalt. So therefore he was born already cut, in effect. So that's another reason why she called him God. Rashi mentions on the Pasuk another point as well. The word in the Pasuk is written Bogod. It's written as one word. We read it as two words. The word Bogod, written as one word, Bez Gimel Dalet, means to betray. So like she's telling Yaakov, you know, I know it was my idea, but the fact is, it's almost like you're betraying me for another woman, because now you're with Zilpah and having children with her rather than continuing to try to have children with me, sort of. Anyway, eventually we find she was davening for more children. Eventually she had Yisachar and Zvolon. Yeah. Anyway. God means good fortune. So like this, they would set up a bed in the house for the mazel of the house. Now, the question is, how would they do that? Isn't that nichush? Isn't that being superstitious? So there's a bunch of answers for it. Among the answers are that not for guests. The point is, it was never used. It was there just for the mazel of the house, just for the mazel, like for the malach in charge of the mazel of the house. So the Rosh over here refers to a Gemara in Psachim that says that the malach in charge of riches is called Nakid, and he likes to see clean places. The malach, when he sees a clean place, then he comes and stays there, and through him he brings down from Hashem wealth into the house. So therefore, you want a dad to have a bed that's always nicely and neatly made, and that way, like, it's something attractive that this malach now finds something nice and clean and neat in the house, that now he comes and wants to stay there and bring bracha to the house.
That should be a neat house also.
So the house in general should be neat, but in particular, for that reason, they would have a neat bed. There's other ideas. The Shittim Kobetzis brings an idea It's similar to the way we have a kisei shel Eliyahu by a bris. We don't actually see Eliyahu Hanavi coming, but we set up a chair in his honor, the same way we have a bed in honor of the Malach who we hope will stay in our house, and then through him Hashem will bring us good mazel.
You don't see this today,
but there used to be such a minhag. There's also the Ran himself actually explains, and this Gemara is also in Sanhedrin, because the Gemara is going to bring here soon something from Sanhedrin in this connection. So the Ran over there explains actually that the vote would be, with that also you're showing that you're showing Hashem, look, I have even more than I need. It's not like I barely have enough. I even have enough money and enough space to be able to have a whole bed that's unmade and specially reserved for this Arisa Degada. And that way, it's like an extra thing that Hashem should send more bracha to the house through it. So whatever the case, it's not considered nichush. So the first definition, Ula is saying then is that that's the dargish of our Mishnah. So again, if we're saying then that a person makes a neder not to sit or sleep on a bed, then he's not allowed to sit or sleep on that one either. But the Gemara says, Omrele Rabbanan La'ula, but the other Chachamim asked Ula, Hoditnan, what about this that we learn in a Mishnah in Sanhedrin? Suppose that, now all the Mephoshim use the expression over here, we're talking about a Kohen Gadol, but the Gemara actually says there that the following piece we're going to be talking about is talking about a king, a Jewish king. Anyway, the point is, when he becomes an Ovel, so now usually an oval would sit on the ground or very close to the ground on the low chairs like we have nowadays. But in the case of the Kohen Gadol, or in the case of the king, really, Shehein Mavrin Osei, when they have the Suda Savra, when they have the first meal after the burial, which other people bring them food, Kola Om Mesubana La'oretz, everybody else sits and reclines to eat on the ground. For whom Mesav Ala Darvish? He, the Kohen Gadol, or the king, reclines on the Darvish, out of cover for his position. He doesn't go on the ground like the rest of them. Now, the question is, if you're going to tell me the Darvish is Arisa Degada, Kula Shatalo Yosef Allah, the whole rest of the year, all the other time, he never sits on this bed because reserved for the mazel of the house. The hashtag Yosef Allah. Now all of a sudden, Hahu Yoma Yosef Allah, and all of a sudden on that day when he becomes an oval, all of a sudden he's going to sit on it. What's the logic? Maski for Ravina. So Ravina says, Ravina answers back. He says, what kind of a question is that? Midi dehava bosa b'yayin. It's no different, for example, than meat and wine. Dekula shata iboi ochel, iboi loy ochel. During the rest of the year, after all, the king has the choice every day whether he's going to eat meat or wine. And on that day, when his relative passes away and he's in Avelos, then we give him meat and we give him wine, and he's expected to eat it. So you see, in other words, that yes, you have the protocol is going to be different on the day when he's an oval. So yes, you could say maybe the same thing as far as the Arisa Degada. We're going to make an exception, and he's going to use it when he's in Avelos.
Just a different way. You could use that. You could have one and
the same way as other times he wouldn't be had. Other times the king can choose whether he wants to have meat and wine that day. But today they give him wine, and regardless, he's going to drink it. I wouldn't say he's forced to drink it. He's the king after all, but like he's required to. We learned all the way back at the beginning of Ksubas, actually, we said the Chachamim actually made a takana to have 10 cups of wine during the meal of the, during the meal, during the Suda Savra. It helps, a few before the meal, a few during the meal, a few after the meal. The point being, it helps dissipate his grief a little bit. Right, he's grieving. But the same way, yes, you could say that usually he wouldn't sit on the Arisa Degada, but here it's an exception. Okay, so you're right. So that's not a solid proof against the idea that a Darvish is the Arisa Degada. Ella Hokasha. Rather, the question is going to be from the following. D'tanya, we learned it of Brisa. Now, yes, when it comes to Avelos, we have this concept that we learned about in Moed Katan, and it's mentioned in various places, in various other places in Shas, that part of the dinim of Avelos is to turn over the beds. The idea was supposed to be, according to most of the Rishonim, all the idea is you turn them over. There's no requirement to daf sleep or sit on the bed itself. According to the Rambam, the requirement is to actually sleep on the overturned bed. The way that beds were made in those days, as we're going to see soon in the Gemara, is you would have a frame. You'd tie ropes around from one side to the other. You'd have a network of ropes going from one side from each side of the bed to the opposite side. And on top of that network is where you'd put the mattress. So now you're flipping over the bed. Then you have the rope side is up. So according to the Rambam, the requirement is to actually sleep on that side. Anyway, the point nowadays, we don't do that for a couple of reasons. First of all, our beds are constructed differently. If you turn them over, the Rishonim explained, there's not necessarily going to be a noticeable difference. But also, because the Goyim, we have more Goyim frequenting our house than the old days. And yeah, they're going to think we're doing Kishuf. They're going to think we're doing some kind of black magic against them or something. So that did eventually fell by the wayside. But anyway. So now, back in the time of the Gemara where you did that, the Braisa says, Daugish lo hayu tefeyu, when it comes to a daugish, you don't have to turn it over. Ela zoykoy, all you have to do, you leave it upright. Now, the Rosh explains, the word zoykoy could have two possible meanings. It could mean you turn it on its end, and you don't use it for that week, or it could mean that you leave it standing straight up. He says, when the Gemara wants to tell us that you turn something on its side and you don't actually flip it 180 degrees, then the expression with it is zoykoy v'dayo. We're going to have that on all the beds in connection with the type of bed that's constructed in a way where you can't actually turn it over. So zoykoy there would just mean to turn it on its side. Here, zoykoy means you leave it standing straight up, because that's why it doesn't use the word v'dayo. So zoykoy, you can just leave it standing straight up.
Meaning you don't sleep on it.
You're not sleeping on it. Well, that's the question. And So the Amos, right, the Gemara mentions in Moed Cotton a reason behind this idea of Kriya Samitza. But anyway, the Amos Arsa de Gadahu. So if you're going to tell me that the Gaudish is this Arsa de Gadah, is this bed of good fortune, for Hatanya, what about we learn in a Braisa? Koifas Mitose, when the Oval turns over the beds in his house, Loi Mitose Vavadhu Koifa, not only his own bed that he himself sleeps on, Ela Kol Mitas Yesh Levesay Habayasu Koifa. He has to turn over all the beds in the house. Well then, in that case, why should the Daugish be an exception? If the Daugish is the bed of good fortune, fine, but the rest of the year you leave it upright, but now also you should have to turn it over, just like all the other ones. So doesn't that show that the Daugish is not an Arsa de Gada?
Does it mean all the family members have to turn the beds over?
The Pashto says it means all the family members have to turn over their beds. Either that, or it means, really I think what it means is all the beds that he himself uses. There may be beds that he himself, he has an eating bed, he has a sleeping bed, he has whatever, yeah, couch, whatever, yeah. Okay, so the one answer is holo kasha. Fine, that's not a big question either, because midi dehada mitam yuchedes akeva. You could argue that this arsa degada would be similar in that regard to a bed that's reserved for Caleb. You have, sometimes they would use a bed where they would use it as a display stand or a place to store Kalim. You have, for example, in the Mishnayos for an oval, you have Sholosh Mitesheim, and one of them is, the Shriva Tmei Medris, Chazagogin Tmei Tmei Mes. So you have one that's used by glass makers where they use it to display their glass items.
It has an edge, doesn't have an edge.
It has an edge, whatever it is. The point is that it's not really meant to sleep on. It's meant for that purpose. Jitanya, and in fact, we learn in a Braisa, im hoysam mitam yuchedes for kelim, that if you have a bed that's reserved for kelim, nobody ever sleeps or sits on it, and sarach lechbaisa, then you don't have to turn it over. Well, the arsa de gadah would be sort of like that. It's reserved for the mazel of the house, therefore there'd be no need to turn it over. So again, that's not a major objection against the idea that a daigish would mean that kind of bed. Ela, I kasha, ho kasha. Rather, we can ask the question on the basis of the following. Detanya, Rav Shimon Gamliel Omer, Daugish. Now, we just said before that the Braisa says that you don't have to turn over a Daugish. However, Rav Shimon Gamliel Omer, Daugish, Matir Karvitov, Rav Shimon Gamliel says that with a Daugish, what you do is you untie the straps, who knows from the Elov, and the mattress or whatever is underneath the mattress, whatever supports the mattress, falls down by itself. The e daugish arsa de gadah. Now, if daugish is an arsa de gadah, kavit in the islay, does it have loops? It's made like all the other beds they had in those days. Where again, beds in those days, we said, were made by tying ropes, by looping ropes around the frame of the bed and stretching them to the other side and looping them and tying them on the other side and so forth and going back and forth like that to make a network of ropes. And then putting the mattress on top of that. So there's no loops to untie. So what does Rav Shimon Gamliel mean?
I'm doing a string.
No, but that's not called loops. Kavitov means loops. And besides, why would you need to? I mean, with regular beds, there's no reason to undo the whole, you don't have to undo all of the network of ropes. All you have to do is saying is turn it over. Why should if a dagish is an arisa beganda, it's constructed exactly like a regular bed, it's just reserved for the mazel of the house, then why would it be any different? Why would Rishon Gamliel be saying it's any different? So the answer is, ki osa Robin Omar, when Robin came from Eretz Yisrael, he said, I asked one of the Chachamim, Rav Tachlifa Bamar Rava Shmei, his name is Rav Tachlifa Bamar Rava, to have a Shchiach B'Shukat Tzaloi. He regularly would spend time in the marketplace of the leather workers. Why he was there, maybe he was doing Mitzrayim, whatever it is, he would regularly spend time over there. So therefore, he got familiar with things that are made out of leather and with things like that. But Omali, and he explains to me, my Darish Arsa B'Tzala, he explains to me that a dagish needs a bed where the support under the mattress is made out of leather. So in other words, a normal bed, we said, you would have, there was a network of ropes, and then you put the mattress on top of it. An arsa betzala means that instead you have a piece of leather over there, which is attached by loops to the frame of the bed, and then on top of that you put the mattress, or maybe even you just sleep on the leather itself. Whatever. So I don't know if it's fancy or necessarily, but what?
It's a little bit expensive.
It could be. It could be that it's more. It could be. It's more expensive. I would think maybe it would be, for example, if you have somebody who's incontinent. If you have, let's say, somebody who wets the bed, a little kid or an adult or an old person or whatever, then you might have them sleep on an arsa betzala because the leather would be easier to clean afterwards. Whatever the case, the point is, in other words, now we understand. So now everything we said up until now makes sense. First of all, now we understand that a dagish is a special kind of bed. That is why the Chachamim say it's included in the category of bed. Reb Meir holds that not, because after all, it has a different name. It explains what it means when we said that the Kohen Gadol, or the king in Avelos, sits on a dagish instead of on the floor. It's not, we're not talking about an Arsa de Gada anymore. We're talking about this leather bed. So he said, so we're saying, forget about Arsa de Gada. There is such a thing as an Arsa de Gada, but when we're talking about a dagish, what we mean is this leather bed that we're talking about. It may also be, another point might also be that maybe a leather bed was something that could more easily be folded for transport. You could more easily take off the leather, or you untie the leather from the loops and roll it up and transport it. So maybe it had that advantage also.
Now, last part.
So now, one second. So now we understand everything we said so far. So the king or the Kohen Gadol sits on that when he's in Avelos. We're saying that you don't have to turn it over, because the problem with turning it over is then with a regular bed, big deal. You turn it over. It's not such a problem. Where the mattress is made out of straw, the straw can be on the floor for a few days. But here you have a bed where the sleeping surface is made out of leather. You turn it over, the leather is going to be touching the ground for a few days, it's going to rot. So therefore, the Chacham didn't require you to turn it over, you can leave it standing straight up. No, that's the thing. Once you turn it over, the thing is, the way you have to realize, the way the beds were constructed in those days, they usually didn't have posts sticking up from the corners of the bed like we do. You had the tops of the long and the short pieces that make up the frame of the bed, the rope. So in this case, we're saying the leather would be attached right over that. So therefore, so now when you turn the bed over, so in the case of this arsa betzala, in the case of this leather bed, if you turn it over, then the leather is lying right there on the ground. You leave it like that for a week, the leather is going to rot. So therefore, the Chacham didn't require you to do that. Whereas Rav Shimon Gamliel was saying, fine, what you do is you untie the loops, the piece of leather falls on the ground, fine, the side that you're sleeping on will not be in contact with the ground, it won't rot. The other side, the underside, fine, you don't sleep on the underside anyway, so who cares what happens to it? So therefore, he says that that's what you do. Instead of turning over the bed, you undo the loops and let the piece of leather fall on the ground. So normally this leather would be suspended between.
Undoing this.
So now it falls down. You think, for example, you have some kinds of folding beds nowadays that are made like that, where you have like a piece in the middle, a piece of stretchy stuff or whatever, to have a little give with your body, which is attached with springs. You have springs all around it that are attached one end to that and the other end to the frame of the bed. As opposed to you have other kinds of bed frames where the whole bed frame itself is made with springs that go from one end to the other. Those are more like the typical beds with ropes that they had in the times of the Gemara. Yeah. Okay. So, okay. So now, continues the Gemara on this topic. Itmar. Ezehu mita ve'ezehu dargish. So here is another difference. What's the difference between a mita and a dargish? Mita mesargin oisa al gaba. The difference is that a bed, when you're tying the ropes around it, you tie the ropes around the frame of the bed. So what you have is, in other words, so you have there's the frame. Then you tie you loop a piece of rope around the frame and you tie it, and then you stretch it to the other side and loop it around the other side and tie it. And you keep on doing that back and forth.
But it's just around the frame.
Yeah, but it's also, it seems from the next piece of the Gemara that usually what they would do, actually, it wouldn't necessarily just be that you have a rope and then another few inches later you have another rope and so forth. It seems they would wind it very tightly around the loop after loop after loop, going very tightly around the bed so that by the time you're done, the entire bed frame is covered with loops of rope. As opposed to a dargish, when they tie the loops of the leather piece, they tie them inside the frame of the bed. In other words, that in the frame, along the side of the frame, there are grooves, there are holes, and they stick the loops through those and they tie them.
To make it tighter and looser.
The pastors can make it tighter or looser for that reason, yeah.
You want a stronger match?
So the Gemara asks, Meister, the Gemara says, though, I have a contradiction. A Mishnah says in Kalim, clay eats me'emes and mekabelim tumah. At what point in the processing of wooden Kalim are they able to be mekabel tumah? Because we know, in general, that an unfinished keli is not mekabel tumah. So what point in the processing of wooden Kalim is considered gemar melacha, the makor hakadosh, in other words, yeah. So hamita v'harisa, so the Mishnah starts listing, when it comes to a bed or an arisa, which is a baby's crib, they're considered finished. Mishi shufin ba'or hadog. When you rub them with the skin of a fish. So the skin of a kosher fish has scales on it. So therefore it's rough. It's sort of like it was their equivalent of sandpaper. So therefore, so you're rubbing it with sandpaper in order to smooth it and in order to smooth it and get rid of any of you don't want splinters on it, for example. Yeah. So the mita mistaregas al gaba. Now, if you're telling me that a mita, in general, the loop, the ropes are wound around the frame of the bed, lomali shifas eradog. Why would you need to rub it with sandpaper or with fish skin? Anyway, it's going to be covered up by the ropes.
Inside.
Now that's the point. In other words, we're assuming that the ropes are wound loop after loop after loop along all the edges of the bed. So there'd be no reason to sand down the whole thing. Ela hava hamigufan. Rather, we can answer that both of them are made not by looping them around the frame, but rather by going through holes or grooves in the sides of the frame. The difference is mita auli va'apuki bevizini. The difference is that with a regular bed, the ropes go through these grooves, and then you tie them on the other side. Dargish auli va'apuki ba'avaksa, as opposed to with a dargish, you have loops that are attached, you have, besides that there are loops attached to the leather, you also have loops attached to the frame, and then you tie one set of loops to the other. So in other words, the loops of the leather of the dargish don't necessarily pass through the holes in the frame at all. Instead, you have loops that are attached to those holes in the frame, and then you tie the loops of the dargish to that. Again, maybe the idea would be that way it would be easier to take apart the dargish and clean it or whatever. Yeah.
The bottom line is the wood is open.
The bottom line is, in both cases, the mitzvah or dargish, the wood is uncovered. Therefore, you have to stand it right. Okay. Another din, since we mentioned before about beds, about having to turn over beds when a person is in Avelos. So the Omer of Yaakov Ba'acha, Omer Rebbe, Mita Shenakliteho Yoitzin, suppose you have a bed where there are naklitin sticking out of it. Now we have those in Mishnayos Sukkah. So the Ran describes it. You have a pole at each end of the bed attached to the bed frame. Then the poles are forked on top so that you can stick another pole across them. And then you use that to make a canopy bed. You throw a sheet over it and it hangs down like a tent and it's a canopy for the bed. So now the problem is, since you only have two things sticking out, then you can't stand it upright. You can't stand it upside down. It won't stand on the two things. So therefore, zoik for b'dayay. So it's enough to turn it on its side during avelos, and that's enough.
Can't sleep on it.
You can't sleep on it if it's on the side. Fine, according to the Rambam, then the point is you'll have other beds that you can sleep on, that you'll sleep on upside down. You have no choice. You can't turn it upside down. But now, the Rashba points out that would only be if the Naklitim are really permanently attached to it. I mean, if you can easily detach them, if they're like in sockets or whatever, and you can easily pull them out, then you have to do that. But we're talking about over here where you can't. And also the Rashba points out, now sometimes you have a four-poster bed. You have Mishnah's Sukkah, so you have the same kind of thing where it describes where sometimes you have four poles like that at the four corners of the bed. And then you spread the sheet over it, then you have a horizontal surface on top and vertically hanging down from there. In Mishnah's Sukkah you have where you can sleep in the Sukkah under a Naklitin bed, because it's not considered that you're sleeping inside something under the Sukkah, whereas if it's a four-poster bed, then you can't. Kinoich pulls it over there. So yes. So a kinoif, the Rashba says also, you would have to turn over. That it will stand on the four things, therefore you're going to be required to. So the Gemara says, in connection with Hilchos Sukkah.
Yeah, but also, if it's considered a chitza under the Sukkah.
That's the point, in other words, that's the point. If it's a kinoif, if it's a four-poster bed, then what you have, in effect, you're sleeping under a Sukkah inside the Sukkah. Except the problem is that the inner Sukkah is not really a valid Sukkah, because a sheet is makabel tumah. Therefore, you're not yotzei in the mitzvah of sleeping in the Sukkah, as opposed to if it's not klitin, if it comes to a peak on the top, like a tent, then it's fine, because then you don't have an oil type. So the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Yaakov, Amar Rabbi Idi, Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Halacha Kerev Shem Gamliel, regarding the Darvish, the Halacha is like Kerev Shem Gamliel, that we said before, it's true, you don't turn it over, but you do have to undo the loops of the leather mat and let it fall down onto the ground, and that's what you do for Kriya Samita during Avelos when you have a Darvish in your house. Okay. Mishnah says, Hanoda min ha'ir, a person makes a neder that he's not going to go into a certain city, he's allowed to go into the tchum, 2,000 amah tchum around the city, but also likonis l'ibura. However, he's not allowed to go into the ibur of the city. Now, what is the ibur? So the mefarish here, printed under Rashi's name, explains that it means that sometimes you have the edge of the city is not, or he says the expression pogum nichnas pogum yotzer. Pogum, in this connection, is a tower. So it means, in other words, sometimes the wall of the city is not exactly straight. Sometimes, yeah, you have towers that stick out of it. Some places you have where the wall recesses in a little bit. Those kinds of things. What we're saying is, when you're measuring the tomb of the city, what you do is you square off. You consider as though that side was straight and include the towers and whatnot, and then you start measuring the tomb from there. So that area would be considered the ibur. So let's say, for example, you have the city wall, and on the two corners of it, you have towers that stick out. And so in between them, you have a space of a few feet that would be, it's not considered part of the tomb. It's still considered part of the city as far as Hilchos Tumin, but you're not allowed to go, so you're not allowed to go into that city if you made a neder not to go. You're not allowed to go into that area, if you made a neder not to go into the city. On the other hand, the Ran understands that the Ibur over here means the 70 amos of the 70 and 2/3 amos approximately around the city. Gemara explains in Eruvin that we have the concept of base sasayim. We have in connection with certain halachas of Eruvin on Shabbos. We have a concept of an area where you could plant 2 saw of wheat or of barley. It's equal in area to the size of the chotzer of the Mishkan, 100 amos by 50 amos, 5,000 square amos. For various purposes in halacha, we consider that to be, also more than that, has a different status in halacha. If you make a square out of that, the side of that square is going to be an irrational number, but it's approximately 70 and 2/3 amos. So that has certain implications as far as the halachas in Eruvin and of Tchumen. So in particular then, in fact, in a Mishnah in Eruvin over there, the mayor says that when you're measuring the tomb of the city, first you measure out the 70 and 2/3 amos, and only then do you start counting the 2,000 amos from there. The Chachamim disagree, and they say that the 70 amos and change applies only in certain cases, only when you have a house near the city that it becomes an extension of the city, or when you have two cities that are near each other, and then you have all kinds of dinim over there. Anyway, so the Ran explains that's what Ibura Shalkira means over here, means the 70 amos and change outside the city. Where according to the Meir, you wouldn't even start counting the Tum until after that. In Shulchan Aruch, by the way, it brings both opinions, and it says that in principle the halacha ought to be like a chachamim, but given that Eruvin are Jirabbanan, then you can be makel and hold like a mayor after all. Or if we learn Tchuma like the Ran does, then we have a Stam Mishnah, Ibura rather, if we learn it like the way the Ran does, then we have a Stam Mishnah saying over here that the Ibur is considered part of the city. And in that case, then that should mean the halacha is the Tchum begins only beyond that. So therefore, so it says in Shulchan Aruch that you can be makel according to that when you're measuring Tchum. Anyway, continues the Mishnah. Abel ha-nodim in a bias, but if a person makes a neder from a house, also in ha-agach v'lefnim, then he's also to go any place from the door jam and inside. That the agach for this purpose means when you close the door, anything, the area, the footprint of the door itself, anything that the door covers, or anything inside of that would be considered part of the house. Only outside of that, when the door is closed, any area that's outside of that, then you're allowed to go into. So the Gemara starts off. Menolan.
The porch is part is covered by the roof.
So let's say, for example, a porch. Or let's say, for example, even you have. Sometimes you have, for example, that the doorway itself, the lintel of the door, is very thick. And you have, for example, you're standing outside the door, but you're still under that. Okay. So the Gemara says, Menolan di ibura de masa ke masa dung. Where do we see that the Ibur of a city is considered like the city itself? Whether we define Ibur like the way the Mefarish did or the way the Ran did, where do we see that should be considered core of the city as far as Nadar? Amar Rabbi Yechanan do Amar Kula, because we have a passage by He be Yosi Yeshua be Yericho. When Yeshua was in Yericho, then you have the story over there. It's an Haftarah on the first day of Pesach. That he sees a person with a drawn sword, and he asks him, "Halonu ata imotzarenu? Are you on our side, or are you on our enemy's side?" And the person tells him, "I'm actually a malach who Hashem sent me to assist you in conquering Yericho." And the Gemara mentions in a few places that he told Yeshua off for certain things that the Jewish people had gotten careless with, bringing the Korban Talmud and learning Torah and so forth. So anyway. So one day they'd forgotten to bring the Korban Talmud because they were busy with battle preparations. And then also he's saying, now you're not learning Torah. And now it's nighttime. You shouldn't need to be preparing for battle. You should be learning Torah. Whatever. The point is that then Yeshua bows down in front of him. Anyway. So the passage is saying that this happened when Yeshua was in Yericho. So my b'Yericho. What do you mean in Yericho? Yilema b'Yericho mamash. Do you mean that Yeshua was in the city of Yericho itself? No. Voxi b'Yericho segeres am segeres. A few psukim after that, it says Yericho was locked up tight. Nobody could get in and out. So certainly afterwards they conquered it, but this pasuk is taking place before they conquered Yericho. So obviously it means that Yeshua was standing in the Ibur of Yericho, in the area, like Rashi is saying, that the city is irregularly shaped, and he's standing in one of those areas where if you were measuring the tchum, you would draw a straight line from there, and he's within that area. Or according to the Ran, it means 70 and two-thirds amos around the city. So he's standing in that area, and then the Malach came and appealed to him. Okay. So the Gemara asked, Ema after the Tchuma. Well, then in that case, maybe we should say the Tchum also counts as part of the city, and the result would be this person who made the Neder is not allowed to go into the Tchum either. The answer is no. When it comes to Tchum, the Pasuk uses the expression, you should measure outside the city, implying very clearly that it's considered outside the city. So therefore, so the Tchum is mutter to him. By the way, you have in a different Gemara in Sota, I think it is, Rabbi Akiva actually learns from that Pasuk the concept of Tchum, and he holds that a Tchum of 2,000 Amos, Daraisa, and learns it from the Pasuk about the Orem Mitzvot, where he says he measured 2,000 Amos outside on each side. All the other Chachamim disagree and say that Tchumen of 2,000 Amos are only Dirabanan, and they say that that Pasuk is talking about that they measured out areas for fields and vineyards and whatnot for the city, not necessarily for the Tchum. We said Hanodim and Abayis, person makes a neder not to go into a house, ain't also element of agaf for the theme, then he's also only to go into the agaf or anywhere inside that. So implying Avim and Agaf for Lachutzloi. So you're telling me that he's not considered in the house if he's standing outside the agaf? Well, the problem with that, Mosiv Rav Mari. So Rav Mari says I have a contradiction from another din of Tsaras of houses. The Pasuk says, after the Kohen comes and checks out, and he sees that, yes, this is Tsaras. So the Pasuk says, V'yotza Kohen Abayis. The Pasuk says, the Kohen goes out of the house. So the Pasuk goes, V'yotza Kohen Abayis HaPesach Abayis. The Kohen goes out from the house to the doorway of the house. V'hiskios Abayis Shivasyom. And then he closes up and locks up the house for 7 days. And then he comes back after 7 days and sees how the Tsaras is looking. Anyway, so when it says v'yotza akoyim in abayis, when it says the koyim goes out of the house, yocho yelach v'beisei v'yastu, you would think that could mean he could go home and then do the hester from there. How would he do that? He could, for example, so the Ran gives an example. He could use a long rope. He could attach a long rope to the knob of the door of the house, go to his house, because there were a few houses away, and then when it's time to close up the house, he pulls the rope and closes the door and announces this house is now quarantined with Saras. Different other Mephoshim give different possibilities also. The Rosh mentions he could send a Shliach to do it maybe. There are Rishonim who learn that maybe even the Hisku doesn't actually mean to physically close up the house, just means to declare it it's under quarantine. So fine, maybe he could do that from his house. No, Tamud Laimal, Pesach HaBayis, no, because the Pasuk says, to the doorway of the house. Well, Iyal Pesach HaBayis, if he's saying that he has to be in the doorway, Yoho Yamad Tachas HaMashkik Yasku, you would think that means that he stands under the lintel in the doorway and closes up the house. No, Tamud Loima, Min Abayis, which therefore the Pasuk previously said, from the house, implying Ad Sheyetz Min Abayis Kulo, only if he completely leaves the house. Ha-Ketzad, so what does it mean? Umid B'tzad HaMashkot B'yasku, means he stands next to the Mashkot, next to the lintel, and he closes up the house. So we see, in other words, that he's standing. So we see, in other words, that he's standing. So we see that anything that's under the mashkof would still be considered part of the house. And we're saying he has to stand next to it. The different gears over here, by the way, the Mephorish brings the word is not hamashkof but hashokof, and he explains that shokof would actually that would actually have mashkof, and then they're not really a different gears. In the next line of the Gemara, we have the word shokof. The Mephorish explains mashkot means the lintel on top of the door. Shokot means actually the threshold that you step on when you're going in and out of the door. We talked about yesterday in connection with the Rabbi's drasha that he told over to Rabbi Yosef that the shoda shin kofei means the bang. That's what we have in Targum Onkelos on our parasha. Every time it mentions the grains of the ears of wheat in Paray's dream that were banged up by the wind, the Targum Onkelos translates it shkifon. So therefore, so the Mephardish says that both of them, so the mashbif can be called that because the door bangs against it when it closed, and the shokif can be called that, the threshold is called that because people are always stepping on it. Anyway. So continues the Braisa. Now, even though we're saying lachatzchila, the Kohen is supposed to stand next to the house when he's closing it up, how do we know that if instead he went home and did it with a long rope, like the Ran says, or with a shliach or whatever, or if he stood under the shokif, under the lintel, and closed it up, that nevertheless it is the diyevet of valid hesker. No, the pasuk continues, he should close up the house, implying no matter how he did it, the diyevet, it's okay. So the point is, though, we see he can't just be standing under the lintel, he has to be standing next to it. So what are you telling me? So now, again, you have an area, you have the door, the thickness of the door fills up only part of the doorway, and the rest of it is under the lintel, but it's still outside the door. In our Mishnah, you're saying that the Nodur would be able to stand in that area, but here we're saying in the case of Tzaras that it's not like that. That part is still considered part of the house. So why shouldn't it be considered part of the house over here as well? The answer is shiny, gavi bias to fit min habayis. The difference is with a house with Tzaras is because the Pasuk says he has to go min habayis, which implies ad sheyetz min habayis kuloi, only when he goes completely out of the house. So in other words, because the pasuk says because the yotza by itself would mean he goes out. When it says min habayis, it's meaning to include something else which conceivably is already outside, but it's still considered part of the house. So that would be this area under the lintel. If it just said the yotza koyin, then yeah, it would mean he could stand under the lintel. So therefore, but on the other hand, when it comes to a neder, given that outside is already outside the house, not really considered part of the house, then therefore, yes, the neder would be able to stand under the lintel as long as it's outside of the agak, as long as it's outside the area that's covered when the door is closed.
What's the difference if it's raining, if he wants to have some cover?
If he wants to have some cover, yeah, I guess that would be a good reason to do it, yeah. Okay. Shabbat shalom, everyone.